All right, and we're here live at the Latina Theory is here live at the conference with the National Association for Chicana and Chicano Studies conference.
Chicano Studies por Vida. This year, it's titled The Queer Turn, and sitting with us is the homegirl, like, y'all don't know her here at Latina Theory.
Doctor, though, don't forget.
Yeah, the homegirl doctor. Jessica
Lopez Lyman. What's up? Good to be back, Latina Theory, my favorite podcast in the whole wide world.
You already know. So we're here chilling in Bloomington, Minnesota. Yes. It's April 6th and it's freezing outside.
And yet here we are with our gente making it nice and warm with
brown
each other.
Brown and warm. Getting really hot. Thank you. I just got this dope button from the conference. Minnesota Knicks. Keep it local. Keep it loca.
Exactly.
All right, so Jessica, we know you're one of the lead organizers of this conference. So can you just give us a little bit of context about what this conference is all about, how it ended up in Minnesota? Most people don't know that we're here.
Absolutely. So the National Association for Chicana and Chicano Studies was started in 1972 when we had social movements happening all around the world, people's liberation movements. We had protests happening to get Chicano studies started, people physically putting their bodies on the line, taking hunger strikes, going into administrator offices and universities demanding that we have a space where we can learn about our history, our cultura, produce knowledge. So Knox has never been to Minnesota before. This is the very first time.
And what's Knox?
Knox is the National Association for Chicana Chicano Studies. It is the largest Chicano studies conference organization in the nation. And over 45 years, it's never been to Minnesota, so we're really excited that everyone's here.
Right? We just got Fox Face Studio just walked in. You know how we keep it luchando. Yeah. Tanya Galaviz, say what's up, what's up? We're live here.
What's up, everybody? What's up?
So many beautiful, amazing
mujeres and people here.
Yeah, so we have about 300 people from all over the country. We have students presenting, grad students, professors like myself, coming together of a wide variety of topics. But this year we're dedicated to the queer turn, so we're thinking about our joteria, how they're creating a really amazing knowledge for us to think about how do we build new worlds, how do we resist. And of course we got to look to all the jotos to do that because they've been doing it for so long.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the special guests that have been here throughout the conference. It started on Wednesday, correct?
Yep, it started on Wednesday, and we've had some amazing plenaries. Plenaries are what happens during a conference where nothing else is scheduled but a panel. So we have folks like Lorenzo from Corime Press out in the Bay. We had Sandy Soto, a professor from Arizona, giving us just really beautiful testimonials about their experiences as queer Latinx. We've also had some great events. We had a dinner tonight. We honored two local committee organizers, Ramona Rosales, who was one of the original students to protest in 1969 to start the Chicano Studies Department at the University of Minnesota. The U of M has the only department in the entire Midwest. We've been around since 1971. We also honored tonight Navigate Minnesota. They do a lot of work with the undocumented folks. We had six young high school students come up on stage and talk to us about DACA and the Dreamers and how we really need to put pressure on Senator Amy Klobuchar to make sure that she does right for us in Washington.
Right on, right on. So this has been, how long has been the planning process as far as the local committee here?
Mm-hmm. We started in October planning, and for us it was really important that we highlighted our gente and all the talent we have here. So tonight where we're at right now is Noche de Cultura. We have Palabristas, the Latinx spoken word collective, performing. See More Perspective, Lady Midnight, hear Maria Isa a little bit later. And what I love about this Noche de Cultura is that it's not just Chicanas, Chicanos, it's all of our gente, because that's how we do in Minnesota. We all come together, we all support.
Right on, right on. You heard that from Dr. Jessica Lopez Lyman. And we're going to tune in to, I think, See More Perspective is on. As Palabrisas just got off the stage.
They were incredible.
Amazing. Shout out to Lorena Duarte and La Lupe. We're going to be interviewing soon. But let's keep it moving. Girl,
thank you so much.
Got a lot of stuff happening.
She's on the run, y'all. She's just running shit.
Al lado de lado, you know.
Yeah, couldn't wear the heels. I had to wear the chucks because, you know, you got to keep
it moving. And more.
We appreciate y'all. Always save ethnic studies.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Cheer Latina Theory, Ariana Henis, Maria Isa. We'll be back soon.
All right, mi gente, Latina Theory is back. And here with us right now is Magdalena Calusa. And she is an incredible poet, artist, She's also from, she's local. She's one of our own. And we're really happy to have her. I'm going to have her introduce herself and share anything else that's important for her, for folks to know.
Buenas noches. Good night, everyone. It's an honor to be here. I was born and raised here in South Minneapolis. My dad is from Guatemala. I do my work based on my experience in South Minneapolis growing up poor, and also having my dad's trauma in a lot of how my family operates and a lot of what was passed down to me. And so wanting to work from a place of healing, a place of paying attention, a place of trying to be the change I'd like to see my parents, as I've heard someone say. And I don't know, I did
wonderful. You know, jumping off of that, I have a question for you. Through the fires of injustices that we've been facing as heads of continuing oppression, under, well, not just this administration, but several throughout the U.S. history, what are certain strategies and moves that we can unify our people to ensure our history and rights aren't forgotten about? How do you seek, and poetry is a way to tunnel that, but, you know, in a brighter, wider, not whiter, but wider perspective, how can we unify more? What are those strategic, you know, initiatives that can take place?
I think poetry can be part of a larger movement to create media. I see media as a place that, you know, our communities are told to consume, and we're not given the time to create, we're not given the resources to create. And so any platforms that we can give people to tell their own stories, to paint, to draw, to create theater that is grounded in their own experiences. So yes, representation, but also allowing more people to tell their stories. I think film is especially potent because it's so free and cheap to disseminate once it's been created. So I would love to see more initiatives where we support the arts, especially across borders. I think storytelling across international borders is important.
Wonderful. If you could name, like, a Latinx superhero, who would that be?
And why?
And why?
That's kind of tough.
Living or past, you know, who would you highlight as somebody that's been an influence, like a superhero in your life?
So I have a dear friend and mentor in Guatemala named Willie Barrenos. He lived in Chicago for a while, in Madison, Wisconsin, and he's back in Guatemala. And his number one thing is humor. He makes sure that there's always laughter. He says, if we're not having fun, then what's the point in working, right? He unifies everyone around food, and he is really good at delegating, which I think helps get things done.
So I
see him as a huge inspiration. He brings his indigenous roots to the work he does. He works with Latinos in Guatemala, Latinos in the U.S., and people who aren't even Latino who are like, how can I be of service? He makes an effort to include and to dream. And one other thing that I think that Willie does really well is he connects the big picture to the now, you know, so he helps us remember why we're here or the history behind how we've gotten to where we are today.
How can more people learn about his work?
If you go to desgua.org, DESGUA.org, that website has information on his restaurant in Guatemala, his school in Guatemala. He's working to start an autonomous university. I suggest you travel down there. And DESGUA stands for Desarrollo Sostenible para Guatemala, Sustainable Development for Guatemala. But they say Desorganización Guatemalteca because what the hell, they're not really organized, right? Humans are already organized. They're just bringing people together over food and laughter.
Right on. You did an amazing piece.
Thank you.
I really appreciate what you do. You know, as an artist to artist, I feel the inspiration and motivation, whether they're positive, you know, or negative. It serves as a tool of medicine to get up on stage and share words with our gente who experience their reflection, whether you're from Guatemala, Mexico, Puerto Rico, you know, South Side, West Side. The power of the pen and word is such a strong influence. Where can more people hear about your work or see you around town?
You know, I'm not performing as much as I would like to because I work full-time and I have health issues, so it makes things hard. But if you follow me on Instagram, Magda Puddle, MagdaPuddle, I try to post things on there. I do a little bit of puppetry, so that's another way you can catch me. And keep your eyes out for Palabristas. I'm a part of the Palabristas collective. So when they're on the lineup, I'm likely there.
Wonderful. Hey, one more question. So what is your favorite song right now by any Latinx artist that you want to make sure our listeners tune into? It doesn't have to be the most up-to-date. It can be whatever. Whatever is your
new jam. School, yeah. Old school. I mean, in general, we want to make sure our listeners...
That's a hard question. Like, let me look at my phone.
Y'all, out of all the questions we asked her, this is the one she looked most stressed out about. Not the one about how we're going to take down oppression.
What was playing in your head before you got here?
On my way here, we were listening to Agua Sala by Bomba Estéreo, and that one moved me.
Yes, beautiful. Thank you so much, Magdalena. Yes. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Love you. So we're back here on Latina Theory at the National Association of Chicana Studies. Right out of the DoubleTree Hilton in Bloomington, out of all places, Minnesota, con un frío bien cabrón.
And we're still here. I just want to make sure people know.
Yeah.
We're kicking it.
We're rocking. But we've got some new listeners here on the podcast. Got Becca from San Pedro. Welcome. How's Minnesota been treating you?
Snowy. I honestly thought that I liked the cold. I was like, I love the cold. The winter's my favorite. I don't like the cold anymore.
I'm Minnesota
so
cold.
Right now.
Yeah,
it's not for me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Becca.
Okay, so I'm a fourth year Chicana Studies major with a minor in history. I don't know. I feel like I always say the same thing in class. I'm like, I'm a this. Like, we have like the script in every class that we go through. But I'm from San Pedro, California. I'm the first person on my dad's side of the family to even graduate high school, to go to college. So I'm kind of like navigating it by myself, figuring it out. It's been an interesting process.
And how did you end up picking this major?
So I went into school as a psychology major, and I took like two classes, and it was just like, it was such an impacted major, and it was so big, and I felt like no one was really like connecting with me or like even making an effort to like, you know, like say like, hey, I see you, I see that you're the first one, you know, like the first in your family here, I appreciate you being here. And then I took a Chicano studies class, and I was like I could do this forever, like this is amazing. And so it just like totally drew me in, and I loved it.
Wonderful. Okay, so Becca, can you tell me a little bit about your experience at this conference?
So this is actually my second time here.
Okay.
So I was there last year in Irvine, and I presented on tattoos. Let me see if I can remember the title. It was like tattoos in the Chicanx community as a form of resistance and power.
So that was, yeah. Yo, my sister has so many tattoos. Yeah. She would have loved to watch your presentation.
I want to take the presentation I did all the way to the end. Like, I want to write a book. I want to do everything with it.
That's incredible. So did you present this year?
I did not.
Okay.
I just came to hang out.
You came to hang out? And what was a highlight of a session that you attended at this conference?
So actually the highlight was one of the first sessions I went to, one of the speakers was saying, like, I don't think it's questionable for Chicanos and Chicanas to claim the term indigenous. And I was like, I don't know if I agree with that. Like, as she was saying it, I was kind of like, I don't know. And then someone raised their hand in the back, and they're like, well, you know, like, there's power in the name. And so for us as people to be picking our name and giving ourselves a title as indigenous, like, that's power. Like, that's us, you know, and acting out our power. And so that was, like, a good way to start the conference. And so, yeah.
That's awesome.
I've got a question for you. What music do you listen to? Like, out of the playlist of what you're getting ready to today, you know, what would you like to request here on Latina Theory?
Oh, my gosh. Can I request Cali Uchis, After the Storm?
Yes!
It's so good. Loving it. Tell us a little bit about, you know, who would you call a Latinx superhero? Who would you consider as a Latinx superhero? Whether we know them in the limelight of, you know, entertainment or just somebody from your own community.
So from my own community, specifically like from my school, I'd say Dr. Jenny Luna. She's super awesome. I don't know if you guys had a chance to meet her, but if you do, she's amazing.
What does she teach?
Chicano studies.
Right.
Yeah, and so her focus is she coined the term, it's Danza Activist Scholarship. So like Danza as a way of being an activist and a scholar.
Yeah. That's so dope.
Yeah.
And a little bit on that note of this person that you consider a hero, you know, did you hear about her presentation was on tattoos?
Tattoos.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that presentation? Like, yeah. I'm just intrigued. Yeah, yeah. Like, I know our listeners would love that.
Okay, so a lot of it was just like getting testimonies from people and just like asking people, or actually what I did was I went on Facebook and I posted like, hey, do any of you guys have tattoos that you can share with me? I'm doing it for a presentation. And so like all like my uncles, my friends, my cousins, they all just sent me like their crazy tattoos. And then as I was at the conference, I actually asked like, hey, do you have any tattoos? Or like, do you have tattoos? And they're like, yeah. And so I had like all kinds of pictures from all kinds of people with their tattoos. But what actually like inspired me to do that presentation is I was on Instagram and this guy had made a short video. He went in a liquor store and he just picked out like a bunch of people and they all had like the praying hands tattoo. And I was like, it just made me wonder why do all our tios, why do all our primos, like why do we all have this tattoo in some form? And so I just wanted to go into like I'm trying to like remember the right words, but pretty much like why do we pick these images and how do like specifically these religious images become transmitted into like tattoos and things that we like wear with us and carry us every day.
Really recognizing the symbolic meaning of why our bodies are used as canvases in the culture. It's a whole culture of its own, right? And then when you blend in the Chicano culture, the Latino culture, it just shares such a lot of a wider story. So thank you, Becca, for being a part of it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for letting me sit with you and talk and get into it.
Right. We're so excited to meet you.
Follow us on Twitter, @ Latina Theory.
Okay, dope. All right, and we're back, mi gente. In the background right now, you're hearing the incredible Lady Midnight.
Yes.
And who's joining us, Maria?
Oh, man, we got the hermana, Latina Theory hermana, Tanya Galaviz.
La Reina.
La Reina, the queen. You know, you've heard her on past episodes at Electric Machete Studios, but Tanya's been on different and new endeavors. Well, not different. She's always been involved in cosmetology. That's her frame of the artwork, her canvas piece. But tell us about this new journey that just popped off this year.
Well, it's a collective of us, mujeres and hombres, that are artists that I just wanted to get together and just build
Chicano
our own.
Chicano artists, right?
Chicano artists, yeah. They wanted to build our own, you know, have our own business and be our own bosses, you know, and that's their main goal, to do, you know, be a boss lady.
Yeah, so many boss ladies. So you got, yourself.
Myself, we got right. Nikki Molinar, Amanda Otis, and Mario Morales. So.
And it's on the bus side, the west side.
Yeah.
Do you hear the amount of St. Paul Pride happening right now, y'all? It's so heavy for this Minneapolis one over here.
I mean, I'm kidding. I love
we're
at the Chicano, Chicana, you
know. In Bloomington.
Conference.
In Bloomington.
To recognize that the first, just gonna say, the first Chicano, Chicana community in Minnesota, right. Latino community.
That's real. I mean, it's very
yo,
true.
I wouldn't be, you know, in existence.
I don't think.
My art craft, you know, was promoted heavily, and I was raised in the Chicano community here as a Boricua. So I remember, you know, Tanya's work and efforts as a Chicana and making sure that the movement was being recognized.
Didn't Tanya just get an award?
Yeah, she's a.
Can we hear about that?
Hear, I mean, more West Side. Yeah.
I'm very excited. I was teasing. For our listeners, I love the West Side. Okay.
I got this little thing called a West Side Year, yes, West Side of the Year Award, or West Side Citizen now it's called. And it's just, I guess it's highlighting all the work I've done, I guess, when I think about it, for the last over 20 years. You know, since of youth, I've been, you know, promoting, you know, Chicano, Latino, you know.
Tanya was there at the front grounds making sure.
I helped actually start the first Chicano Latino Youth Conference through CLAC. Back then it was Chicano Latinos Affairs Council, and I actually helped pave that way. So I've been doing work, I guess. You know,
it was at Hamlin, right?
It was at Hamlin, yeah. And so I've been doing this work.
How many years has it been of you building in community? Because I just really want to
I
honor
feel like
that.
Since yeah. I've been like 12, 13 years old, and I'm now, what, 39? 39 years young?
30's the new 20.
Hey, I'm 39 years young. That's all, you know, hey, I don't feel good, and it's, you know, I'm just starting a new adventure now, so
hey.
It's like,
boom, boom.
Of course you are.
I must say, Tanya also, you know, influenced a lot of the leadership through media, working with Don't Believe the Hype and TPT back in the day as well. So I remember the Tanya behind the camera, or in front of the camera, not behind.
A little bit of both, but yes, mostly there. In front of the camera, we did a lot of interviews with. I think that, I can't even remember what that episode was about. It was so long.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, it was just fun having, you know, like, for, you know, mentoring the young kids, you know, like, through the process of how to start a or do interviews and the production process of, you know, interviewing and researching and everything just coming together and actually finding, like, also, like, music and stuff to go with everything. So, no, it was a fun process, you know, and I never did it before, and I almost went into production because of that. And, but, you know.
So many hats. She's a mother, an activist, a boss lady.
A businesswoman.
Boss lady.
An entrepreneur.
Boss lady. And also, though, you know, I gotta throw in the work that you've done in the Dansante community, because that's very important, and it's also a connection of what brings healing in our community.
Right, yeah. I was involved with one of the first Dansante Azteca community in Minnesota. It came out of St. Cloud, but it came about, we ended up having a home in St. Paul, Minneapolis. So, yeah, that was over, gosh, that started like in 96. And I didn't start till 98, but yeah, I've been doing the work since then and just preserving that, the culture of the Mexica people, and making sure that our roots are, that we know where we come from as Mexicanos, indigenous people of Mexico. Mexico, you know. So yeah, that's my pride and joy also, that, you know, and that is very healing for me. It, you know, it's one of my places where I go to be spiritual and you know, just make sure my kids know who they are, and you know, so don't forget who they are, because you know, if we don't know where we came from, then we're not gonna be able to
become a descendant.
We gotta remember where we came from, or else we're not gonna know who we are gonna be in the future. We gotta live for kids and our generations ahead. And so,
you could say one thing. You know, we're seeing bit of when Sazi right, Latina Theory. If you could say one thing to number 45, as a strong, powerful Chicana woman that you are, face to face, what would you? We ain't gonna say what you do. What would you say, since we have the freedom of speech?
Let's see here.
And we got papers.
I'm just saying, I'm here. I ain't going nowhere. I'm going to do the work with or without, you know, you in that White House. Because it happens in our community directly, you know, whatever. Yep. So we're here. I'm here to stay.
And what do you share to, you know, the young first generation Latina that is in the same pavement of saying, you know, I want to do this, I want to be there, I want to do this, I want to keep my values instilled in me. Give them some motivation.
Just, you have to foremost make yourself happy. So whatever you, as a person, want to do in your work, you got to make sure you're happy first, because that's going to reflect in your work.
Hey, boom, boom. Do you own a pink pussy hat?
I do not own a pink pussy hat.
Latina Theory does not endorse the pink pussy hat, okay?
That's not my color, my pussy.
Boom, boom. Thank you, Tanya. We appreciate you. I will see you at Fox Face this weekend.
That was always fun.
All right, so Latina Theory is here. And Maria, can you please introduce the next incredible person joining us in this conversation?
Just all around circle of amazingness in the community, the arts, literature, I mean, mentorship. I've known her pretty much my whole entire life. But when you talk about scholars in the Latino community in Minnesota and history, you can't list women without listing the Honorable Lorena Duarte, who's here on Latina Theory. Lorena, welcome.
Thank you. Okay, we have to do our line.
Oh my gosh.
All right,
okay,
ready?
Take me back to high school.
We're gonna start with Sally.
Sally was the girl with eyes like Egypt and nylons the color of smoke.
I'm not in this, y'all. I'm confused like y'all. Explain it to us.
So, you know,
so
She took me back.
So that is a line from Sandra Cisneros' House on Mango Street. And it's a piece that I did that I kind of put together my senior year in high school for speech. And my speech coach then went on to teach at another school.
Yeah. My freshman year.
Where she came upon this beautiful dynamo and was like, I have a piece for you.
Yes.
And it was that piece. And so years later, I don't even know where we were, but we like locked eyes and we're like, Sally's the girl!
She said, there's this, you know, I remember, I think, the Kaz, Mrs. Kaz Merrick, you know, she recognized that there needed to be time focus specifically in prose genre in Latino literature, and I joined the speech team, and she's like, you remind me of, you know, it was like your typical white teacher type of deal.
God bless her. But you know, yes, it's true. Mm-hmm.
I was like, let me guess, your other Latina student that you had. But I was like,
shocker,
I want, you know, you know how it is, right? but I was on this new venture and journey. I was the only Latina on the team, pretty much in the school. And so the story's connected, and I'm like, well, who are you talking about? And she's like, Lorena Duarte. And I'm like, of course. <That's> and it made me feel like, okay, I can do this, and I can contact Lorena. And she's like, you can? And I said, yeah, her father and my mother are good friends. And, you know, it's like the Salvadoreño families that migrated and the Puerto Rican families that migrated. It's puro comunidad. And I reached out to Lorena, like, I was probably 14, and she was like, I got you, mija. It was La Prensa. I think I called La Prensa's offices.
So, and I must have just been starting college.
Yeah.
I think.
At Harvard.
Yeah. Oh, Lord Jesus. You're taking me back.
Harvard graduate.
Yep.
Poet, man, you are making, like, my husband and my fam, all these macho men on the side cry during your piece to your mijo. And ojalá.
Ojalá. No, it's... The best things when people tell me you made me cry, I'm like, yes.
I've heard those before. So when she came out with all that, I was like, there it goes. Tell us a little bit about your pieces, your work, and your work as a palabrista.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I've been writing poetry since high school, and it's always been a way for me to express myself and, you know, connect with the greater world around me. I'm, you know, very much an introvert and very much in my head. But, you know, sometime around my mid-20s, I finally got up the nerve to take out all of my poetry. And, you know, inspiration kind of is a bit from everywhere. And like the Ojalá piece that I did tonight, that's when I was editor of La Prensa during the first Gulf War.
Can you just, for folks who don't know, talk about what La Prensa is?
Sure. La Prensa was founded by my dad, and it was the first like statewide Latino newspaper in Minnesota. This was back in 1992, 3? And back when, I mean, the Latino population still isn't huge, like, in Minnesota compared to, say, California, but it was really small then. It was really small then. Like, we were the only Salvadoreños for a long time, and, you know, I mean, you know what that's like, because you were, like you, we were very much kind of outnumbered by the more established Chicano community. So he started it because he had worked on the census in 1990, and he knew how many pockets of Latino communities there were
all the demographics.
But he was very frustrated by the fact that all the stories that you saw about Latinos in the newspapers were negative, you know, about negative things about immigration, negative things about, you know, our
marginalized communities.
Exactly. And he knew the truth of it, that we bring so much to communities, not just economic growth, but like culture and diversity and vibrancy and all that. So we started La Prensa, and I worked there on and off, like, throughout college, and then started after college. I was gonna be a lawyer. Then I went and worked for some lawyers, and I was like, that is not for me.
Not my job.
That is okay.
Isn't it the
Latino like role, like you're a first generation, or you can go to law school. We're all supposed to be lawyers at this table. Not that it can't happen still.
No, but my mom was like, vos hablas tanto, debes ser abogada.
¿Verdad?
Right? And, you know, it's like either you're going to be a lawyer, a teacher, an engineer,
doctor,
or a doctor. That's it.
Oh, there you go.
And so as someone...
We all know.
We have those four professions we have to choose from. And for me, like, none of it fit. And I was a writer at heart. But I didn't think I could make a living doing that. But so I started working with my dad. I eventually became editor. That's when, ojalá, we come back. I was trying to find a picture, so the Gulf War had started, and I was trying to find a picture of the people of Iraq, right? So like, and I had access to like all of the news wires, right? And I couldn't find a picture. I found so many pictures of like American flags and brave American soldiers and, you know, a fighter jet taking off from the... couldn't find anything. I searched literally hundreds of pictures until I found this one picture of this boy. And he was, as I describe him, a bombed black pixie lost in front of a fireball that was perhaps his mother, that was perhaps his favorite place to play, that was perhaps the greenest hilltop on this airplane. I mean, it literally, like, the poem came to me. And I just thought, what are we doing? And it brought me back to, you know, I grew up in El Salvador during the Civil War. So I saw, can I swear?
Yeah. Sin vergüenzas.
I mean, I saw shit that children shouldn't see. Exactly. Right? Yeah. And that really, you know, I mean, literally a sake of like therapy and stuff to get over. Like so many, I have like a not funny joke, but that like all Salvadoreños I meet have PTSD, but I swear
to
God.
No, it's true. It's true. It's,
war does horrific things to children. And so that poem and then many, many other poems. So like if I go back and read my stuff, stems so much from that, you know, like what happens to children in war, what happens when children feel mute. That was the other poem, the little bird poem, like what happens when you feel you can't express yourself. And so you know, I think the big thing for me in my work is encouraging people. When I go into the schools, which I haven't done as much lately because I now have
You're
two
a
little,
mom.
I now have two. Yeah. I have a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old, two boys. The 4-year-old is on the autism spectrum. I do not have time. Like, I do not know how
Your time
here tonight.
Is mother. We are blessed to have you.
I have to let out of the cage.
It's what you said. My mother was like, Mija, I feel like I should be here, but I kind of want to stay home tonight. I'm like, I think they understand.
I think you've earned. I think your mom has earned it for sure.
Right?
Like my dad and her mom are very similar in that sense of like always being at every event and being such pillars of the community. Like,
they took so much hits so that we could be here today.
Exactly. So, but so because I have very limited time, you know, I don't get to go into the schools as much, which I love to do. But when I do, or when I have, I always tell the kids, like, you have to speak up for yourself. Because no one will do it for you. The world will ride right over you because you're young, because you're brown, because you don't speak the language, whatever. And I'm not here to make you a poet.
Yep.
I'm here for one day. I'm going to give you a workshop. My expectation for this is not that you're going to come out being a poet.
Right.
I mean, great if you want to.
Right.
But more than anything, I want you to know the power of your own voice. And you have to own that. And you know, I talk to kids like in grade school, little kids, and I say, like, you have to tell people what you need, what you want.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to teach that to my boys, you know, and trying to raise good feminist boys.
Yeah.
Woo!
In this type of world, with this type of administration.
Oh my God. Lord.
And more power to you, Lorena, with that sword, you know?
Take another sip of my wine.
Take a sip of my... Going off of that, if there is one song, it doesn't have to be new, just we want, you know, we play musica on our podcast.
Yes.
What song would you like to reflect on Latina Theory?
Oh, I love Le Doy Gracias a la Vida by Violeta Parra.
Right on.
You know, it was when I was little, you know, again, coming from El Salvador, anything that was leftist or socialist or even social justice inspired was like comunista.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And like, you know, verboten, like no.
Shh, cállate.
Exactly, right? But I found a tape that I don't even know who it belonged to. To this day, I found a cassette tape, the kind with the ribbon, unlabeled, and among some stuff. And I popped it in, and it was all Nueva Canción, you know, all the kind of folk stuff from Chile. Mm. So it was like Silvio Rodriguez and Violeta Parra and. Gracias a la vida. It's like it's such a prayer, like a, you know, like this beautiful. Also, La Masa by Silvio Rodriguez is another one that actually I listen to when I write poetry. Both of those songs are like on my loop, like that and Nirvana. It's very strange.
Yeah, that's kind of like what we do at Latina Theory. They're gonna like have a boom. Our repertoire is huge.
It's being very Latina.
You're going from like a tango, and then all of a sudden it's like Bomba Estéreo.
My sister literally made an Instagram story and was like, my morning started off with banda. I went to Cardi B. Then I went to a ranchera and ended with Pimpinela.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's it. Wait, you're Sigma Lambda Gamma, right?
No, I'm not.
No.
I'm not. No.
What are you?
I'm not in any.
She's a luchadora.
I'm
by night.
I thought you said pledge sister. Sorry.
Oh, no. Don't worry.
Her sis. Well,
I'm in a Latina sorority.
Got it.
But I'm like the only one in the state.
You know, I've been for like 20 years. We got some. Faustina.
But that's literally the only other one I thought about.
Push, what up, Faustina? We know you're listening.
It's hilarious. They keep waiting for the chapter to be established.
You know, that's we're gonna have to bring you back on Latina Theory to talk about that experience. We would love to have you. You know, Lorena, I mean, I'm so glad you're part of our interview today, but most definitely we want to welcome you back on Latina Theory in the future.
No, and I remember when you guys started, I had just come back from living in South Africa.
Yeah, I remember.
And I was like unpacking my shit from like a transatlantic whatever, and I was like, I'm gonna go, and then I was like, I don't know what's going on with my life, but I'm so glad be here today, and would love to, people hear sorority and they're like, what? And then I'm like, no,
we
want a community service.
We want to have a topic of that discussion, specifically within like the black and brown,
it's
you know,
so
female.
Different. Oh yeah, my God, it's not what you think.
I don't have my best friends in Chicago are Latinas, and all are, you know, part of the sorority groups. Shout out to La Tere, who's a phenomenal MC. But we definitely just want to sit down and
it's an interesting topic.
Specifically with all of our listeners that are in high school and that are graduating to go to college and are seeking a place of sisterhood that they may not have support from.
Let me tell you.
Those are certain avenues, and I know you were in Harvard, so I can only imagine how fucked up it can be.
How white and elitist.
Exactly.
And,
so come back and let's just have some more cafecito and more chisme and more consciousness for our gente.
All right. You guys are amazing. You're doing amazing work, and I'm so happy. Like, bless you.
We love you.
All right, and we're back, mi gente, with Latina Theory. Nuestra Maria Isa is getting ready to perform, so you have me right now, and here joining us is also Dr. Sara Hinojos. Thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Jessica Lopez Lyman recommended that she come talk to us, and she was kind enough to join us. So can you share a little bit about yourself and about the role that you played in the conference today?
Yeah.
Or in these last few days?
Absolutely. So I'm from Pasadena, California. I'm in SoCal. I grew up there, was raised there, went to school there, and then of course I met Jessica in Santa Barbara. And I've been living for the past 2 years in Houston on a podcast. So I'm excited to have experienced different geographies of Aslan, right? Being able to be in California and being able to understand Tejanas and Tejano culture that's been documented in Chicana and Chicano studies, but I've never had an opportunity to actually live there. Today at the conference, or yesterday, I presented with Jessica, with Araceli, and Aida Hurtado was the moderator for our panel, and we were able to present our collective and collaborative work on Chicanas, or Mexicanas, and fashion. It's been such a great project to work with all these women and to be able to document
this aesthetic that makes women, especially Chicanas, so unique and so different. So I presented yesterday, and we had a really good time.
Can you share a little bit about, like, highlights about what that aesthetic is?
Yeah, so the aesthetic is very homemade, meaning that it comes from this passing down of information from our mothers, right? So, like, we learn how to sew in the house. We learn about aesthetics from our mothers because we see how they decorate. And it's not just visual aesthetics in terms of art, but we see the way our mothers cook, or we see the way that our mothers, you know, are able to hustle in the house and be able to provide a lot of things when sometimes there's not enough money. So those kind of strategies that they do and what they do to survive teaches us so much about the aesthetic that we wear on our bodies, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, you know, we're very Ike kind of attitude, I like to say, like, right, we wear our identities, our social identities, in shoes and the way that we do our hair and the way that we wing our eyeliner, the way we do our nails. Like, everything that we do says something about our social identity, and that's really what the project is about, right? Where we can tell stories from the shoes that you're wearing, right? Or the beret that you're wearing. I just told somebody else, like, oh my God, I love her red beret. I said, I don't have a hat head. Like, it's so weird, you know, but you know, there's something about you wearing that, right? Or like these codes that we can read, you know, and we think of brown berets right away,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So it's like, it's this visual language that we have, and we understand the politicalness of it, right? With other people might just be like, oh, that's a cute hat, right? And so there's this like almost secret visual language. In addition, there's like a literacy that we have because we can recognize these type of fashion codes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Thank you. And I wish y'all could see Dr. Sara's outfit tonight. She's wearing this like incredible pinstripe suit that I was also like, yes, with her like red jacket with La Virgen and these beautiful earrings. It's just incredible. And so can you share a little bit about why you think it's important for nuestra gente to create these kinds of spaces?
I mean, it's fugu, right? It's for us, by us. I mean, the mainstream has ignored us and has misrepresented us. And sometimes I ask myself in my own research on media studies, like, do we even want mainstream representation, right?
Yeah.
Or do we want to be ignored? Because every chance that they get to represent us, it's not who we are, right? It's a negative and bad, a non-productive stereotype. And this is why we need spaces, because we need to show our diversity, right? Our uniqueness. And the mainstream never does that. They always want to boil us down to this one image that nobody is, and then everybody expects us to be that, but we're not that person, right? And so what I love about spaces like Knox is like the range of raza that's here, you know? Like, to me, it's like so beautiful to see the spectrum, right, of what it means to be Chicanao, Chicanx, like everything, right? Not even that, but like there's Latinos that are here too, there's mixed people, native, like it's just so beautiful to see the diversity in our community and people just gathered. And it's a very privileged space to be, right? And to be able to acknowledge that privilege, but also just enjoy each other in this space.
Beautiful, beautiful. And then can you, you know, you started using terms like Chicana X, Chicana O, there's also Latino. How do you define Latinidad? How do you see that term? Because it seems to bring up a lot in conversation about right. How people feel about it, the difference between that, Chicana, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so when you study Latinidad in media studies, there's like, it's usually a bad term because they're talking about like the homogenizing of it, right? But there's also definitions like it's a political identity. It's one that uses to gather a community, right? And for me, I just love to see the X everywhere. I love that it wasn't like a fad and it's, you know, it's not going away. And to me, it's just, you know, it's a FUBU term, you know?
Yeah.
And I love it. And, you know, some people reject it because of the Latin, you know, beforehand. Or people just want to be people. And I think that that term gets us a little bit more to being defined as
people. I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. It's really kind of hard to explain it. And you know, I think it's a better unifying term. I think it's a way that says so much about, I don't know who we are. Like, it's just, it's a slippery term, but it's one that I use depending on the geography as well, yeah. Right? It's a term that we can come in and out of. You know, it's just, there's good and bad things about it, right? It is a unifying one, but at the same time, it flattens everything out, right?
I love the term. I love how you described it as a slippery term, yeah. Because that is my relationship with it too. Yeah. I see the utility of it, and right. I see how it can be applied beautifully. Right. And I'm also like, and we need a, I can, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and we're
yeah.
not this homogenous yeah, thing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, because it's different, right? And it's not only the term, but it's like, what do our bodies look like,
yeah.
right? So it's like, if you're a lighter-skinned, blue-eyed Latina,
yeah.
she fits in that category, of course, right? But then we also have Latinas that look like Viola Davis,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like, it's different, right? Mm-hmm. The relationship with society, the way people treat you, of course, is going to affect you and the relationship with the term as well. And then people want to check you of like, well, you don't really fit the category. So sometimes people, you know, back away or don't like it or whatever it is.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
All right. So two more questions for
yeah.
you. So name a real life Latinx superhero for you right now.
Oh my God. You know, it's crazy that you asked this because I'm teaching a class called Latinas Culture and Communication. And my students' final project is that they have to create a comic book with a Latina superhero.
Oh, I love it.
And right now, that is Gabby Rivera for mm-hmm. me. I read her book, Juliet Takes a Breath, last summer, and I was like, I'm going to teach this to my students. And then we read the volume of her first comic book, America, and like, I'm in love with Gabby. Like, it's just the way that she writes, the way that it's so relatable, and then my students read her work and they love her, and I she's just so creative, she's so funny, and I'm so happy that she's been able to, you know, expand her resume and people are acknowledging her as like a legitimate writer, and I love that. Yeah,
that's incredible. All right, so make sure to check her out. And then our last question for today is, what is the song or musician Latinx that you are listening to that's your jam? It doesn't have to be the newest or the
right.
latest, whatever is your jam right now.
Right now I'm really listening to Lila Downs.
All right.
Yeah. It's just, you know, her raspiness in her voice, the texture in her voice, it's like I want to eat it. You
yeah,
know?
Yes, yes.
And I just love it. And, you know, I love her faster paced ones, but also her more like somber, you know, songs. Like, I just love it, you know, so she's my go-to girl right now.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sara Hinojos, for your time.
Thank
we appreciate you. And we hopefully, maybe in the future, we'll have you as a guest on our podcast for a longer conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thank you.
All right, and that's a wrap. You have just listened to the first Latina Theory podcast live. Again, we were here with the National Association for Chicana and Chicano Studies Conference, the Queer Turn. The wonderful Dr. Jessica Lopez-Lyman invited us, and we're so grateful for all the incredible gente who talked to us today. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will be back soon with more updates, more Latino genius. We love y'all.